Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
EQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, Intruder Alert. EQ 3, Intruder Alert.
Oh, Mr. Sulu, you have no idea. Good evening and welcome once again to Madam Perry Salon. I'm your host and cruise director, Madam Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry, or in the Brit world, Jennifer Maudette Perry. And I am so happy to be with you again tonight. Thank you so much for everybody that's following the show lately. If you're listening live on Blog Talk Radio, please click that rectangle that says follow and follow me. Or you can also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. And yeah, that helps me keep the fact that you listen so much and you comment and you stay involved. It helps me to get great sponsors and keep getting great guests. And just lately to go over, we've had so much fun. I'm still getting a lot of comments about some recent guests, one of them, Chasm Sultan, who, yes, he is on tour right now with Todd Rundgren again. So, and get his CD bootleg, Chasm Sultan. You probably know him, too, with a million other bands like Blue Oyster Cult, Joan Jett, Celine Dion, Meatloaf. But yeah, he's with Todd on this tour right now, the Shovel Rock Tour. Also last night we had Bobby Rebell, a financial analyst from Reuters, CSNBC, MSNBC, CNN, talking about her book, How to Be a Financial Grown-Up. And we had a couple of winners. She gave away some books last night, and so you'll be getting those in the mail. I think that was Duffy and Becky, and I forget who the third person was that got a book. But, yeah, that's a great book and a great show. And coming up soon, next Thursday, we have Athena Bass. You may know she's a star of Ex-Rock Star's Wives. I never can get that name. Ex-Rock Star Wives. Her husband was James Kotak from Scorpion. She's a drummer with the band Femme Fatale, and she says she's the younger, and she makes sure I say younger sister of Tommy Lee. And she'll be on Thursday, and then next month we've got Joe Vitale. He's actually a multi-instrumentalist, but known as a drummer with Joe Walsh, and he's worked with C.S. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, lots of people he's written for and worked with. And tonight, even better. I have been so excited about tonight's show. If you know me, you know what a fanatic I am about true crime. And this guy is just he's the best. Tonight, welcome to Madam Perry Salon, true crime author and TV star M. William Phelps. Welcome to Madam Perry Salon.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jennifer. How you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic. I'm very happy to have you here. I feel like I'm living the dream, and so glad you could get us into your schedule. I know you're a busy man, but we're just happy to have you here. And, you know, I'm such a fan of yours, of your books and your show on the Investigation Discovery Channel, Dark Minds.
Dark Minds,
that's
Deadly Women.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you watch them all, huh?
Oh yes, definitely.
Are you one of those viewers, Jennifer, who leaves ID on all the time, or do you tune in just for those two shows?
Actually, I mostly watch yours. There was a couple of other shows on there that I watched a lot, but they seem to kind of, I won't name them, kind of dragging the story, but not yours.
Oh, there you go.
I keep yours.
I
watch yours because you keep it moving and you keep it interesting and you keep the energy in it. And so I love your show, love your books. The only problem I have is you just don't write fast enough for me. I understand. And I think, you know, and some people, they're either true crime fans or people who just don't get it. And the ones that don't get it, I think it's because, you know, they say, well, you know, how could you read this? But I think it's because with me, you know, real people will come up with things like plots and ideas that they think are going to really work that, you know, no author would come up with because their editor would say, oh, come on, nobody would do that. That wouldn't happen.
Right.
And even in the investigations you write about, there are sometimes when even the law enforcement officials don't believe something's going to happen that way, like in the book Obsessed, when there's your book where the woman kills someone, and they say, oh, well, no, a woman couldn't beat anybody, couldn't cause this much damage in a murder. It couldn't have been a woman. But I'm amazed at the things that people will do and that they think that will work and can get away with, and then they're going to outsmart everybody.
Well,
and
that's what
don't.
The narcissist does. That's the narcissist. The narcissist thinks that he or she can outsmart everybody and no one's going to believe them. No one's going to believe the truth. They're going to believe them. A narcissist, by definition, is someone who thinks they're smarter than everybody else.
Oh, yes, always. And so it's now, what is the difference between maybe a sociopath or a psychopath and a narcissist, or do they do those intersect?
Is that a dog? Do I hear a dog in the background?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I live at the Corgi Manor. Yes. A corgi. She was wanting some attention right then in a tree. So sorry. No, I hurt no
me,
one. No one was harmed.
Let me answer your question. This is a popular question. Thanks for asking it. And a lot of times, you know, your Nancy Graces of the world and people on television interchange these words, sociopath and psychopath. But there are marked differences between the two. And a sociopath, you can think of a sociopath as someone who has kind of learned the behavior or kind of been nurtured into the behavior. Whereas a psychopath is basically someone who's kind of born evil and develops that evil as they go through life. So those are the two differences. Both of those people share narcissistic characteristics for sure.
That's amazing. Yeah, so I guess that, obviously a narcissist would think that they could outsmart everyone and too and so forth. Your most recent book, Don't Tell a Soul.
Right.
Where did you find this story and what made you write? Because I wonder too how you choose which stories you do research and write about.
Well, this particular story, I was given this story by a producer I know on a producer for Snapped, a show that I'm on occasionally, Jupiter Entertainment.
Yeah,
Donna Dudek is a friend of mine. She's a producer, and she sent me an email one day and she said, Phelps, you got to check out this story. She said, it's perfect for one of your books. And I looked at it and immediately I saw something in it that my readers would like, you know? That's one of the ways that I choose stories. Another way I choose stories is just to keep my eye on the pulse of the news, you know? And I try to choose stories, as you know, if you've read my work, that necessarily aren't mainstream, but they aren't totally off the radar either, so somewhere in the middle. I don't like to choose those high-profile cases.
Yeah, I see that. And this story, was certainly that, because the tell us a little bit about what the basic part of the story.
Well, I mean, the basic part, without giving too much away, because, of course, everybody's going to run out and buy it and read it, is that this woman, this 38-year-old woman, Sherry Walker, is found on the side of the road dead by a pizza delivery man, and her body's been burned. It's obvious that somebody poured fuel on her, gasoline, and lit her on fire. And so an investigation begins. And, what happens next is that we meet a woman named Kim Cargill, who, you know, by all accounts is been divorced a number of times. She has several different kids with several different fathers. And she's one of these people, Kim Cargill, that if she's ever crossed paths in your life, there's no possible way you could ever forget her. because she's like a hurricane of you know, of evil, if you will, a hurricane of problems. This woman, wherever she goes, there are problems, and so that's how the story unfolds. It's a Kim Cargill is one of the most disturbing people I've ever written about, I think. And that's saying a lot. I've written I've written 33 books now, so that's a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you say that's quite a statement. And I think this story really, all the stories have a part that get to you, but this story even more, because Cherry Walker, she was an innocent, really, in a lot of ways. She was an innocent person.
Very innocent person. She was disabled. She was just getting out on her own for the first time in her life. She had her own apartment, and she was beginning to live a life on her own, being disabled. And, you know, within, I think, a year or 8 months of being out on her own, she's found on the side of the road, murdered, you know. So it's, this part of the story really struck me. I mean, to kill anybody,
yeah,
you have to, you know, you have to be, there's some sort of evil within you, darkness within you, but to kill somebody who's disabled, I think, you know, there's a special place in hell for that person, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Listen, by the way, if you're listening live and you want to talk to M. William Phelps right here on Madame Perry Salon, the number to call is 646-716-9922, and it's toll-free call in the U.S., and I've already got a caller for you.
Great.
Hi, welcome
Let's
to
have
Madame
it.
Perry Salon with M. William Phelps. Yay, doing great. Who do we have here?
You got the one and only Juliana Costa from Austin, Texas.
Juliana Costa from Austin, Texas. Yay! Hey, Julian. Julian, I'm talking to true crime author M. William Phelps about his latest book. And he's also, you probably, Investigation Discovery Channel, Dark Minds, and he's also on Snap. You see him all the time. Do you have a question or a comment about true crime books or criminals? Or
I guess my question is, I wouldn't know if it's a take, but more of like a question. It's like, you know, do you get to actually talk to some of these criminals and, like, you know, I guess in your investigative process for writing? And when you do that, what's that like? What's the vibe like, man? Are you like, is it pretty, like, bone-chilling stuff, or is it, like, you know, pretty straightforward?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I have a book coming out in July, the end of July, called Dangerous Ground, My Friendship with a Serial Killer, where I interviewed a serial killer for 5 years. So I spent five years of my life talking to a serial killer for, you know, anywhere between, you know, 20 hours and 30 hours a week, 7,000 pages of letters, the Skype interviews, visits. I'm interviewing a woman right now from prison and writing a book about her. So I would say it's 50-50, Julian. 50% of the time they want to talk to me, 50% of the time they don't want to talk to me.
And what's the vibe like, man, whenever you do talk to them? Is it like do you just kind of, do you feel that presence of something just completely effed up? Or is it like, man, they just look like normal people, and just somewhere down the line there was some kind of disconnect? Or
I should say I feel like I'm talking to Tommy Chong, but that's another story.
Well, that to me is like the interesting part from an outsider looking at, you know, it's
no,
like,
well,
man, that's...
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, absolutely, you feel different around some of them, but, I mean, part of the characteristic of a serial killer is that they're charming, and that, I should say, part of the characteristic of a psychopath is that they're charming, and they can, you know, they can put on this persona, and actually, sometimes you feel like you're just talking to somebody you know. I mean, there were times during the 5 years when I was talking to this serial killer, and it just felt like I was talking to a fishing buddy or somebody I played basketball with, or, you know, a friend. So you got to be on your game entirely all the time when you're talking to these people.
Man, that's trippy. That is.
Wait, When can you tell if they're being straight with you or if they're just playing a game with you? Because I'm sure that they try everything, and you've heard so many.
Well, the thing you have to do is, me as an investigative journalist, I know more about them, A, than they think I know about them before I talk to them, and B, I try to learn things about them that they don't want me to know. So I kind of just, you know, go along, listen to them talk, and, you know, and kind of gauge. I hardly don't ever I wouldn't call somebody on a lie until the very end of the interview or the end of the process.
Is that like a journalist investigative tactic where you want to keep them like, you know, on a chill level until the end where you're like, hey man, this is right? Or
sometimes, I mean, sometimes I'll hit them at the end with, you know, I know you're lying, I know you're a scumbag, I know you're a liar, I know all of this stuff. Sometimes I do that, but other times I let it go and I just write about it. You know, I'm like, well, he or she told me one thing, but I found out another, and then I write about it. So, you know, it's not always good sometimes to call people on this stuff because, generally speaking, a psychopath, a narcissist is never going to admit to what they've done completely. So, and if they do admit something, you know, you're only getting probably 60% of what they've done.
Oh, God.
Man,
now
crazy.
On the show, and stop me if I'm giving something away, but on the show Dark Minds on Investigation Discovery Channel, you have another investigator, a person that you consult with who has, I guess, kind of like a secret weapon or a source, who is in prison, a serial killer that they call 13.
Yeah, that was on season one, John Kelly. John Kelly's not an investigator.
John,
he's a friend. Yeah, he's a forensic psychologist. John, during season one of Dark Minds, had a serial killer in prison we called a code name 13 because we didn't want to reveal his identity. And then on season two and three, I developed a serial killer of my own in prison who we called Raven. And that's the person that I'm talking about when I say I spent 5 years. The book is going to identify who Raven is, talk about his crimes. I even solved one of his crimes. And yeah. So yeah, it's intense.
Man. Yeah, so do you ever really get used to it? Actually, before, let me take it back a little bit further. I think before, and I'm not saying this is because Julian's a musician, but you're also a musician, aren't you?
Yeah, I was a musician for many years. I in the 80s, I was in the kind of hair band type of stuff. I realized rather quickly, you can't make a living off being a musician, so I turned to writing. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, by the way, if you're listening live, the number is 646-716-9922 if you want to call in and talk. And M. William Phelps is here. Also, Julian Acosta called from. There's a Julian Acosta Day. Acosta Day in Austin, Texas. He's that popular a musician. But I've got another call here for you. Hi, welcome
Great.
To Madame Perry Salon. Who do we have here?
It's Beth.
Hello?
So, it's Beth. So, writing is more money than music?
No, that's not what I said. No,
okay.
That's not what I said. I said I realized I couldn't make any money off of being a musician. It just wasn't in the cards for me particularly.
That's a better way to put it.
I was about to say, you know, with my writing career, I'm probably going to be singing on the street corners anyway. They'll pay me to go away.
Okay. Hold on just one minute, Beth, because I know you've got another question, too. But also, we've got another call. Everybody wants to talk. All right. So, let's see. Hi, welcome to Madame Perry Salon. You're here with Madame Perry and M. William Phelps. And who do we
Greetings
have?
Greetings from Tucson.
Tucson. I love Tucson. Oh, wow. I've been to Tucson a number of times.
Oh, right. I think Madame Perry knows who this is.
I have a lot of great regular callers that are just, everyone is different, everyone is fantastic. This is James Brady, and I don't know if you should give away your other name, your pseudonym. He's one of the people who puts together the Wild Wild West Steampunk Show in Tucson every year.
No, I'll give away the name. Come on.
All right. I know the radio was DJ Darkfang, but your other name is, come on.
You were close. Just replace the DJ with Captain. You got it right. See? Easy. You were close.
All right, Captain Darkfang.
I'll give you credit for being close.
All right, see? I don't want anyone to think I'm losing my mind. Okay, so, you know, when you're talking with, as you know, with William Phelps, and I was talking, what I was getting to is that before he became, and writing, you know, becoming a journalist and writing about true crime, and especially, I know with your TV shows, you go for the cold cases a lot, and what drives you? Is this personal for you?
I mean, part of it's personal, I guess. My family's been affected by murder. My sister-in-law was murdered, but that's not what drives me and what I do.
Wow.
I mean, what drives me, well, I don't know what drives me, but what motivates me is, you know, finding answers that, you know, to questions that I have. For murderers, for different people. I, you know, my books really are about people. Murder's a part of it, but mostly they're about people and how people respond to murder.
Okay, James, unless you had another question first, or about crime, I had what I wanted to ask, and it is... Sometimes, I won't say who, but I've asked another true crime author who was on here. I said, you know, when you read the stories and you get the background stories, when you read the book, there's so much more than what you can get in a you know, short television show, and you get the background on a lot of the murderers, the killers. And I always say, isn't there some place along the way in the background where somebody saw this person, you know, was heading this way and could have stopped them? And I remember the particular author said, no, somebody's in the wrong place at the wrong time, it's going to happen. I understand that. I grasp that. But, I mean, there were so many people. This woman, Kim Cargill, in your latest book, Don't Tell a Soul, I mean, this woman caused a lot of people a lot of hell. So,
I mean, you look at all of her ex-boyfriends or ex-husbands, and they all believe that she was crazy. But, you know, when do you believe that someone is crazy and that they're actually going to kill somebody? So that's a big leap for somebody to take. I mean, you know, we don't walk around looking at people we know saying, gee, that bitch is crazy. That bitch is going to kill somebody, you know, and actually believe it, you know, so... It's a difficult thing. I mean, murder is very rare. So number one, it doesn't happen all the time as much as we think it does. And there are people who are just psychotic walking around the planet. You know, my advice is just stay the hell away from them.
You got any advice?
That's true.
Sorry. You got any advice on staying away from those people? And then number two, can you kind of relate, man, maybe on the talent level? Which has nothing to do with the darkness, but on the idea of like people not wanting to believe certain things of major importance because they're like, oh man, for example, talent. You as a writer, you know, you've made a success story out of yourself, but wasn't there like a time where your family or someone close to you was like, this guy can't be that good because I'm associated to him, so there's no way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, but I'm a type A type of driven person. I don't pay attention to any of that. I just keep going and going and going until I get where I need to be. And I don't listen to the noise, you know. If you start to listen to the noise, then it's going to bog you down. So I just kind of squelch out the noise and just keep moving forward.
Okay.
Ah, I see. Now, but then again, in the book, Don't Tell a Soul, there was a point where the, I think the last husband, you know, she, Kim Carter would tell stories on him and get him arrested for things and say she was beaten up, and she, this guy, poor guy, got carted off to jail. And he even asked, I think he was either a deputy or a police officer, tells a story to him and says, "What can I do?" And the guy just looks at the extension cord and says, "Wrap that around your neck and jump off this
exactly
off this balcony. That's all you can do."
Exactly. Sometimes, you know, there's nothing you can do unless, you know, obviously the person is caught for what they're doing. Sometimes you just got to drive away, man. You just got to turn your car around and drive the other way and get as far away as you can from that person. I mean, that's the best thing you can probably do from someone you know is not, you know, playing with a full deck. I mean, that's what I would do.
And then for people who had, yeah, for the children, she had, like you said, different kids by different men. And so there's these kids living through all this hell with her. And, yeah, you'd think somebody could have gotten those poor kids out of the way. You know, or you think somebody would have seen it come with this behavior. You know, the comedian Rita Rudner says when you get married with somebody and have children, you know, when you meet someone and you think about getting married, just ask yourself, is this the person I want my children to spend every other weekend and their summers with? You know, before you get married and have kids with them. But this is, you know, this is
well,
so much different.
Were,
I would just...
People were doing things to take those kids away from Kim Cargill. The only problem is the system was taking a little bit longer than it should have. I mean, you know, Cherry Walker, for example, was ready to testify against Kim Cargill in court before she was murdered. So there were people in her life that were starting to file reports and do stuff. It's just the system that takes so long.
Okay. Wow. You know, one thing that that's, I think is pretty amazing in the, I guess, in this age too, is that when I'm reading, sometimes when I'm reading your books, I can read, and then I can usually go on to YouTube and watch part of the court trial or something.
Yeah.
Thought, well, that's,
yeah. A lot of it's a lot of it's televised now. Yeah.
Yeah, I think like your book Obsessed, where the woman was worked at a research firm, and she murdered the woman that was dating her boyfriend or the guy that she thought was her boyfriend, and represented thought so much of herself that she represented herself in a murder trial.
Well, that's just narcissistic behavior again. You know, she believed that she could convince the court that she was innocent, and she lost. She's in jail for the rest of her life.
Wow. So I guess, yeah, I know we've been over this, but like you just can't imagine. There's just no end to the narcissistic. I don't know. Just that same that latitude they have, or that just undying belief that, you know, everything I do is right, and it's all about me, all about me. What do you like best about doing a television show? Do you, after a while, do you enjoy it? I mean, you go out, you have to travel a lot with that, and you meet people, like in family. Like,
well,
I think one of the shows was. Go ahead.
I could tell you that the part I dread and the worst part of it for me is when it airs. All right, that's the worst part of it. The best part of doing television is doing the work. I mean, Dark Minds was a show I did for 3 seasons, not on anymore. And those 22 episodes I did on Dark Minds were all unsolved cold case serial killer cases. So I brought some attention to all those cases. A lot of those cases were collecting dust. Nobody was looking at them. Now they're being reinvestigated. In fact, 3 of the cases now have task force formed solely because of the work I did on Dark Minds and kind of revigorating the investigation. So that was doing some good, and I enjoyed that. Television's hard work. I mean, television isn't glamorous like people think it is. It's very hard work. I mean, for example, I've spent 8 hours today inside of a car to, spend 2 hours shooting some television. So oh, there's nothing glamorous about that.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? You know,
okay.
So,
all right. Yes, it's not all glam. Yeah, I know. It's not the glamorous side of show business. Like when I used to show up for when I had a television show, cable in Atlanta, and show up and with my back then with my hair in hot rollers and stuff, and the security guys there, and I'd give that line from Patsy Cline and Coal Miner's Daughter when she's in the hospital. What's the matter? Ain't you never seen no glamorous star before? But it's like that, you have to. I mean, you always look like a star when you're on camera. Everything about you. But there's a lot of that driving and the truck stops.
That's all production. Right now, I'm working on developing a TV show, and actually working on the show as a producer, and I'm an expert on camera with a major celebrity who's kind of presenting the show. And the work that I love doing on this is the investigation. Some of these cases we're doing, I've been investigating for years. So it's good to put the use of my investigations in these crimes to good use now, to present them on TV. So that's one of the pieces I enjoy of it. Production, I really like.
That's cool, man.
Okay. Well, right now, as I was saying earlier, because of the people who listen and the great guests I have, I've got some lovely sponsors, and I'm going to stop just about 2 minutes and talk about them and play their ads. And this gives you a chance. I know you've been on the road. Gives you a chance to get something to drink, a cup of water, a cup of coffee, whatever. And I'll be right back in 2 minutes. And Julian, are you going to stay with us for a couple of more minutes?
I am on my way to the venue where I am going to go do some stuff tonight. So I have no...
Okay,
no,
where are you playing tonight? We'll give it a shout-out.
I'm not playing anywhere as much as I'm going to go hang out.
All right.
Present my different situation or in a different light. But,
all right.
It's out in what's it called? To be honest, I don't even know the name of the venue. I just know it's by code text.
Okay. All right.
But yes, I'll be here.
Well, listen. Stop back. Have a good night and stop back in sometime, Julian, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. And Mr. Phelps, you're going to get a little break, and I'll be right back.
Hi there, my friend. Are you struggling with repeating life problems? Does it seem like your life does not flow the way you were intending? Have you lost touch with your dreams and maybe even given up on them? Have you tried many spiritual modalities and practices in the attempt to resolve your life problems with little to no significant results to show for it? Well, I have a solution for you. Hi, I'm Rina Suriano. I'm also known as the Conscious Health Alchemist. I am known to help people crush their life problems easily and quickly using my Luminous Consciousness Expansion practices. I also assist people to create radiant health and a bling and body using my Fun Food Fantastic recipes and my secret holistic elixirs and remedies. Look, most people spend thousands of dollars over many years on personal development, seeking the better of their lives. The fact that you may not be aware of is more than 90% of people who use the common laws of attraction and other similar teachings never really experience much change in their life. If you want to discover the reasons why you continue to struggle and even suffer in life, regardless of what personal development modalities you are using, then I have a gift for you. Go to my website right now at lifebrilliance.com and instantly download my free report and video called Luminous Life Detox, How to Create a Life That Flows and Feels Good. I look forward to hearing about your transformation soon. I'm Reno Suriano, and remember, live victoriously. Yeah! Music by Ryan Farish on the album of Life in Stereo.
Here's a crazy notion. What if online networking and marketing wasn't divided over so many specialized networks or platforms? So why so many options? Specialized or not, the business needs are the same. So wouldn't less specialized and more open be better? Wouldn't one platform with the services and tools for marketing and networking be the easiest and ideal find? And if you found it, wouldn't more businesses, artists, and organizations be more engaging with marketing and network for more business? And wouldn't that mean all sorts of opportunities for more revenue, time, and energy? And wouldn't that extra time and energy further encourage new innovative services or products as a surge of new commerce floods local communities with new enterprises who now must network and market themselves for your business? And isn't that the power of commerce? Anyway, that's the crazy notion. Check out endsofob.com.
All right, endsofob.com, and also Reno Soriano. Reno's been on before a couple of times, and he just energizes everyone with his information on how on conscious eating and different ways to lose weight, and he's how to get yourself healthy. As Reno always says, he wants you to have a blingin' life. So, again, this is Madam Perry back here with M. William Phelps, my favorite true crime writer. Only he can't write fast enough for me, but I can't hold that against him. He's on the road. He's a busy man. So, M. William, what do you have coming up soon?
Because
I know you've got
soon.
Something coming soon. Yeah, new book.
Yeah,
you've got something coming this summer, right? Words on the street.
Yeah, July 28th, I think it is, or 25th, end of July, I have that book, Dangerous Ground, coming out, which is it's kind of a book that my fans will probably, my true fans like you, will probably enjoy more. It's because partly it's a memoir. So I talk about my sister-in-law's murder. I talk about my own life. I talk about why I got into crime. I talk about, you know, how dealing with a serial killer for 5 years kind of broke me spiritually, physically, mentally. And it wasn't an easy book to write, but, you know, out of that pain came a good piece of work, I think.
Oh, man. Yeah. Because you have to, I guess, relive so much all the way, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, reliving it in your mind or sitting with a therapist and talking about it is one thing, but when you write something and it stares back at you and you begin to figure out parts of your life that you didn't expect to figure out, boy, it's shell-shocking, I'll tell you that.
Seriously. Have many people kept in touch with you? Because you know what? I noticed whenever I see you on TV now, on shows when I see you like Snapped, of course, you know, you're telling the story or you're, you know, telling your part. But when on the shows, because I subscribe to Dark Minds too on so I have them all on YouTube. But I noticed sometimes when you would go out and talk to families, you have such a way of being, and because you know that they're in such pain, but you have such a way of being, making people feel that you really do care. And you can see it in their faces. You can see that they hurt, and they've probably been asked questions so many times by people for different reasons and for different agendas. But I'm thinking, too, especially the babysitter killer.
Yeah, that's a tough case.
Yeah, that was one where there was a family you went to talk with, I think the father and the brothers and sisters. They seemed comfortable with you, like they felt like you understood. Oh, wait, I have another caller here for you. Hi, welcome to Madam Perry Salon. Here with Madam Perry and M. William Phelps. Come on in. Who do we have?
Hey, this is Sandra. Sandra?
Hey,
hi, Sandra.
Sandra, how are you doing?
Okay.
Hey. All right. I'm here, as you know, M. William Phelps, and we're talking about his books, and I was talking about his TV show and also about his upcoming book where he talks about a serial killer that he's talked with for several years. And I guess goes to for information about the mind of a serial killer. So Do you have a comment or a question, Sandra?
Well, I think I'd like to listen for a while, and then maybe I'll comment on something.
Okay, all right. So, but you see what I'm saying, don't you, William? It's just that, you know, I can imagine every time. Yeah, I can imagine every time you talk to a family. You know that they've been questioned and interviewed and had people, you know, sometimes hound them.
Well, to mind
their pain.
I know what it's like. I mean, I've watched my niece and my nephews and my family grow up without, you know, my sister-in-law, their mother, and subsequently my brother died several years after my sister-in-law. So the kids lost both their parents. I know the ripple effect of murder. I know how these people feel. I know how the families feel. So in some ways I can sit down and I can bond with these people, and they understand. I know where they're coming from. It's very, very difficult. That part of filming the show was very, very hard. You spend 8 hours, 10 hours a day talking to people who've lost kids to murder, and you begin to take on that darkness, and it weighs heavily on you. Trust me.
Sure. Go ahead, Sandra.
The TV show that you do, are you actually interviewing the serial killer or giving him a platform to talk about these things?
I on the show, I would go to my serial killer in prison, and he would be a voice on the phone, and I would ask him questions about the cases that I am investigating, and ask, kind of like Silence of the Lambs, I would ask him his opinion about the killer that I'm chasing. So we wouldn't talk about his crimes. He would talk about the crimes that I'm investigating.
Oh, okay. I get it.
Yeah. And so, and the book he has coming out in July, you said July 22nd? You know I'm going to write this down.
July 28th, I believe.
July 28th, okay. And tell us the name again.
Dangerous Ground, My Friendship with the Serial Killer.
Dangerous Ground. So, because I was going to say, from both sides, whether you're talking to the family or friends of a victim or you're talking with a serial killer, I'm sure that does kind of hang on you and weigh on you. How do you cleanse yourself, or how do you get a little relief from this? I mean, I imagine you'd have to have some time where you just stay away from it for a while.
I bathe in holy water. Sandra, that's a joke. I actually was at one time. I was going to mass about 3, 4, 5 times a week for many years. Which is part of this book, Dangerous Ground. I stopped doing that while I was talking to the serial killer. I kind of had a slip in my faith while I was talking to him, and that's all part of the book. I talk about that, but you know, it's very difficult to balance the darkness with the light, if you will. But you just have to find different ways to do it. I like to gourmet cook. I like to work out. I like to do things like that.
Okay, all right. Okay, if you're listening live, I'm Madam Perry Salon talking to New York Times bestselling author M. William Phelps. I was looking at here. You've made over 100 media-related television appearances on The Early Show, Today Show, View, Fox and Friends, True TV, Discovery Channel, Fox, Good Morning America, Oxygen, OWN. And you're a member, I read, too, of the, what is the, you're a member of the Multidisciplinary Collaborative on Sexual Crime and Violence, which is also known as the Atypical Homicide Research Group at Northeastern University, and also maintained by Enzo Gaksik. What is this group about, and how did it begin? How did you get involved with it?
And Enzo's the one who asked me to become involved with it. He started the group. It's a group of,
I would say 100 people now or maybe more, and a lot of those names you would recognize. You know, they're serial killer experts, they're psychiatrists, they're detectives, they're professors, and each has their own expertise in a specific area. And we, you know, we talk about cases, we swap information, we swap scholarly articles, if you will, and, you know, it's just a group that tries to keep its pulse on, you know, killers and investigations and cold cases and what's going on out in the world.
Mm. Do you ever have, do you ever talk to, like, killers that say they didn't do it?
Sandra, most killers say they didn't do it. I would say 99% of the killers I speak to tell me they're innocent and they've been framed and, you know, this whole thing. And, you know, I mean, you know, it's, I don't know, you know, someone who kills 8 people and then tells me that they've been set up, is that's ridiculous to me. You know?
Well, how can you take stock in anything they say? How do they help you figure out what's going on in their mind if they can't be honest with you?
Well, they're not totally dishonest about every single thing in their life. Some things they choose to talk about, it's kind of it's indifferent, meaning that, you know, there's no reason for them to lie about it. You know, for example, I would ask the killer, I would ask my serial killer, you know, why would he take a woman 2 miles into the woods and kill her there? Why not kill her in the car? And his answer was, well, I can only tell you why I would do that. And I said, you know, why would you do that? And he said, so nobody could hear her scream when I was killing her. So it's that type of information that only a killer would know. You know, the average person wouldn't be able to say that, and there's no reason to really lie about something like that.
Yeah, and I'm sure some of them get off on the fact that they're proud of the fact that they know what they're talking about. It, like, appeals to their ego when you ask.
Yeah, of course.
Them.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah,
yeah,
seriously.
I mean, this is – go ahead.
Oh, no, please.
No, I'm done.
I was just
next
okay.
Question.
I was just going to say, if you're listening live and want to call in, I'm still talking. We're still here on Madame Perry Salon. We're talking to M. William Phelps. Number is 646-716-9922. And Phelps, he's a regular, one of the regular and recurring experts, frequently appearing on 2 long-running series, Deadly Women and Snapped. And you were a consultant on the first season of the hit Showtime cable TV series Dexter. What was that like after doing, you working with so many real cases, than to work on a television show as a consultant? Any difference, or?
Yeah, I mean, I consulted on the first, before the first season started, and I consulted on some crime scenes. So they wanted some reality in some of the crime scenes that Dexter was kind of involved in. So they wanted the reality aspect of it. You know, there's a lot of experts that consult on Criminal Minds and CSI and things like that, and you know, you try to bring a sense of reality to the dramatic version of it.
Mm-hmm. So do you ever think that, well, you know, oh, I never wanted to ask you too, you have several books about people who were being victimized but survived. And
she survived.
That's
yeah.
a pretty, yeah, yeah. She survived. That had to have been very different to hear a harrowing tale from somebody. But so good to know somebody made through. I mean, I'm sure they need help. They need a lot of support.
Yeah, one of those books
still.
Is She Survived. One of those books is called She mm-hmm. Survived, Melissa Schickel, and her story
yeah.
is, you know, absolutely incredible. I mean, the fact that she survived a home invasion attack by a madman and lived to tell the story is just incredible in and of itself. So yeah, those are
mm-hmm.
interesting stories to tell. And they're told from the point of view of the victim.
the perpetrator in those short books doesn't get a lot of coverage. I give all the coverage to the victim in those stories.
One of the saddest things, and this is a situation I know that happens more than this, but in your book, the name is Because You Loved Me, and that was about the woman, Jean Domenico. And I always think those kind of stories to me are even sadder because here is, you know, she's a single mother, and she's working as hard as she can to keep things together, to have a good life, to give her daughter, give her family a home and clothes and a good life. And then the daughter and the boyfriend murder her.
The 14-year-old daughter meets an 18-year-old boy online. Thus begins a kind of an obsessive relationship between the two of them. And the mother doesn't agree with it. So, of course, she doesn't agree with it. She's got to go. You know, that's how some people respond to their problems, violence, you know, unfortunately.
Well, that's the way some teenagers are very reactionary. And that happens a lot with teenagers. I mean, I've seen it on TV and crime shows that they want to kill their parents. It happens quite often, is what I'm saying. They're very angry.
Like the ones where they...
The teenagers kill their parents?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen often. That's not accurate to say often. When it does happen, it's often in the news, I think is the way to put it, because it's kind of a big story when it does happen. Luckily, it doesn't happen. Look, I mean, the reality of it all is murder rates are down by 50% in this country from 24 years ago. So while murder rates have dropped in half, the reporting of murder has gone up, you know, substantially. So that's why it feels like maybe there's more of it.
I wonder, too, with a drop in the rate, I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that there are so many advanced means of solving crime and identifying the perpetrator, like with the DNA and all different kinds of things. Like, you know, there is like this almost nothing that can't be examined. Maybe somebody's the print from their shoes or how their foot fit in the shoes and even one hair on something or carpet fiber, even one thing. There's so many more ways. I wonder, do you think this could be a deterrent sometimes with people?
That
there's going to be some way? No?
I don't think so. I think that the bottom line is that no matter what you do, no matter where you go, if there's somebody out there, unfortunately, who wants you dead, they're going to find a way to kill you, and it's not going to matter to them.
That's scary.
and it's, you know, it's not going to matter that they're leaving forensic or DNA all over the place. That's not going to matter to them. What's going to matter to them is that they need to kill you.
Mm.
Wow. It's a sobering thought, isn't it, Sandra?
Yeah.
You know, when someone makes up their mind.
It's not a lot of premeditation. It's more like passion that drives them. If they were plotting it out, they might think about, you know, getting caught, but I think they just do it on impulse.
Well, before you came on, you two, we were talking about, it's just, it also has to do with the narcissistic nature of some people.
Yeah, I mean, what I say is most people plan, most people who commit murder plan everything up to the point where they pull the trigger and hardly nothing after. That's why they get caught, right?
Mm-hmm.
They like to plan everything up until the point of impact, and then, you know, they leave behind evidence. So, yeah, my advice is not to murder anybody. That's very simple. Right?
That's true. You know, because so many people think, you know, well, it's easier than getting a divorce and having to split everything. But when you're in prison, you're not going to have any of that stuff, much less half or all of it. So
right.
You might as Well, get a good lawyer and do some praying and try to work things out like a civilized adult.
Right.
If you
would
can.
You say
right.
a lot of murders happen between husbands and wives?
That seems to be the case. There's one that happened, actually. I live in a very small town. I think it's probably the first murder that happened in this town in, I don't know, 50 years, maybe longer. A husband allegedly murdered his wife maybe a mile from my house. And he got caught by, you know, again, leaving just, you know, the simple things catch murderers like that. Not the big things, not the blood on the steering wheel or the hair left on the carpet. It's the simple things. For example, his wife was wearing a Fitbit and they caught him lying about her movements in the house and when she was moving around because the Fitbit recorded everything.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So,
oh, yeah.
So it's the little things. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Folks, we've got just a couple of minutes left, so if you want to talk to M. William Phelps here, crime, murder, serial killer expert, creator, producer, writer, and former host of Investigation Discovery series Dark Mind, award-winning investigative journalist, M. William Phelps, you've got just a few minutes to call in 646-716-9922. I notice also on your website you have a page, too. You have consulting services. So, folks, if you want to go to mwilliamphelps.com, where people can book you for speaking engagements or personal appearances.
Yeah, I do a lot of that. I enjoy that. I enjoy that a lot. I do lots of lectures, lots of talks. Private talks, big talks at conferences, and I enjoy that a lot.
Yeah, because I see, so you do a lot of lectures or private functions. Also, if someone has an interest in film rights or any of your books, they can go to your website and find out how to contact you, especially with your entertainment attorney.
A couple movies in the works as we speak on some of the books.
Oh,
and when does the new book come out again?
The new book comes out the end of July, Sandra.
Oh, great.
All right. And it's called Dangerous Ground, My Friendship with a Serial Killer. That's quite a title. Dangerous Ground, My Friendship with a Serial Killer. I am William Phelps, and I just want to say thank you so much for – I know you're – to say you're a busy man is quite an understatement. Would you come back and talk to us again when this book is published?
Yeah, sure. Just get a hold of me and be glad to set something up with you.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you so much. And wish you all the best and everything you have coming up. And thanks to everyone who called us, to my sponsors, Insophobia and Reno Soriano. And just happy you were all here on Madame Perry Salon. Go buy every book M. William Phelps writes. Trust me.
I think
they're
I will.
Good.
Thanks,
let me tell
William.
You, Sandra, and
thank you.
This is
thank
no
you very
joke,
much.
And
have a good night.
And I don't want. Good night, Sandra. I don't want to scare anybody. I don't want to scare you, but I get started on your books, and I will stay up all night. So that's...
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Very kind of you.
And
all right.
It's been a very pleasure, and thanks so much for being here, and hope to see you again. Good night.